And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Quickly, before we open this episode of the Warriors Plus Minus podcast, injury news. James Wiseman came down bad on an alley-oop in the Detroit game, landed hard on his left wrist, flexed it. He made the dunk at the time and then shot the free throw with that left wrist. Made it. You know, adrenaline has a way of fooling you into thinking something is better than it is. In the off days, they did an MRI, found out it was a sprained left wrist. He will miss 7 to 10 days or be reevaluated in 7 to 10 days. Though from Steve Kerr, it did sound like they expect it to be about a 10-day absence, which probably means 5 or so games. The Celtics game, he's going to miss Tuesday. And then my guess would be the entire Texas road trip, 2 Mavericks games, 2 Spurs games. But Warriors will be without their young center, their backup center at this point. They only really have one healthy center, Kevon Looney. And from talking to Steve Kerr, it sounds like the center rotation will be Looney to start, and more Draymond Green small ball center, more Eric Paschal small ball center. So here's the podcast.
Plus minus.
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit.
Plus minus.
That is a word right there.
I didn't even say. What'd you say?
Fluffle.
Plus minus.
Yeah, like you, Marcus Thompson.
Marcus always tell the truth. Plus minus.
The only thing that I would say to Ethan Strauss is that he's a pretty damn good reporter. He's well
plus
respected.
Minus. I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Warriors Plus Minus podcast. Marcus Thompson came off the bench last time. I thought it worked pretty well.
Second unit.
We're going to keep him in an early sub pattern. He'll be here early, I'm guessing, hopefully. Warriors are now 11-9. What is the largest thoughts you, Ethan Strauss, and you, Tim Kawakami, have on this 11-9 team?
They are a middling team so far, which, if you have your expectations in line with that outcome, doesn't just result in the roller coaster ride that we see every time with this team. It's incredible. Maybe we spend too much time on Twitter, on Warriors Twitter, but it is amazing watching how people are just so bipolar, where it's fire Steve Kerr to, oh my God, they're great. And if you just take a step back, a lot of what happens beyond the insane comebacks against the LA teams is more or less predictable. You expect them to pound the Pistons at home, and they do it. You might expect them to lose on a back-to-back, even though they're going against a team on a back-to-back against Phoenix, which probably a bit of a more complete team. And overall, there's more positive happening with the Warriors, and we have to look at them as a broader story than this season. And if you look into that broader story, I think there's a lot more positive going on than negative. The short-term negative is Oubre. I mean, that's the biggest negative of them all right now for them. But a lot of the other bigger trends, how Wiseman, I believe, has validated the draft station so far. Some might argue otherwise, but that's what I think. And Wiggins being efficient and being pretty good.
Ethan's all in on Wiggins, by the way. I don't know if we've seen this trend, but Ethan's all in.
He's there.
I'm just all in on admitting reality and the thing where, hey, it's going to, you know, the Minnesota Timberwolves fan warnings and you're going to hate. Look, I don't know what to tell you. It's 32 games into the Wiggins experiment, and my assessment is pretty good. It is what it is.
As I might have said on Slack a few times, what the hell did you think this season was going to be once Klay Thompson went out, right? I mean, what were you thinking this team ought to blow out to the number one seed in the West? There's no chance it's that good. Even with all upsides, you know, realized, if James Wiseman was the fourth best center in the league, which he is not, but he could be. He could be the best center in the league at some point, but he's not there. Even if he was topping out at most of his potential, this team would not be equivalent to one of the, you know, Utah, the Clippers, or the Lakers. Just would not. If you just exhale from there and see where they are. They're one of the middling teams. But, you know, there's a big pack. We don't know Dallas and Phoenix and San Antonio and Memphis. They're all kind of in that pack. I can't sort them out. That's what the games are for. But the Warriors have beat all the dreadful teams, and there are a bunch of them. And they have lost to most of the good teams. And it's going to be how they do against those middling teams. It's just not a surprise to me. That's where the kind of the polarities of the fan reaction of these Warriors fans who apparently think they have to compete for the championship or it's everybody's got to get fired is, I guess, not shocking, but it is hilarious to kind of view through the prism of, listen, they're going to win this game and they're going to lose this game. Accept it. But then they win one game, it's, oh my God, they're going to compete for the championship. And they lose the next one. They're terrible. Got to restart everything. Everything they've done for the last 3 years is a joke. Just accept what this team is. It's probably going to be right about 500 or better, perhaps maybe worse. And within that context, they're probably going to get better, as Ethan said. There are signs that they can get better. There are signs that they might have some struggles, but there are signs they can get better. I think everything that's played out through 20 games has filled those boxes exactly. Slater might disagree, but that's what I would say.
This is what I think has led to some of that. I mean, beyond just like it's just a fervent fan base that didn't have the Warriors for a year and got kind of obsessed with the Warriors, right, because of the five-year run. And it was completely ripped away from them, and then now it's back. And I think that leads to just high level of engagement from the fan base. I do think the swings, while them at 11-9 is exactly where we kind of expected them to be, maybe even a little bit better than we expected, they are still have a minus 17 point differential because they get killed when they lose. That's one of the things. Like, they don't just like look bad when they lose. They look really bad. I'm looking at their win-loss splits and their losses. They're losing by an average of 19 points a game and shooting 28% from three in their losses. Like, their bad performances are like really bad. And I do think that's led to, you know, like, remember when they lost to Utah? I was like, changes need to happen.
Kerr has kind of, you know,
he changed the starting lineup after that game.
Changed the starting lineup. And, you know, he's talked about how they view this season. I don't want to get too hard. Fans are fans. They went, you know, Warriors went to five straight finals. I get it. Steph Curry is still out there. Draymond Green is out there. They're looking at remnants of what used to be as it develops into some other version. So I don't want to go too hard on this, but they're getting drilled by good teams. This is a team that's not built to like go blow for blow with really good teams when the good teams are going. They are just not built for that. And maybe they're overachieving, you know, in some of the other games, because yeah, that point differential does tell you something. It tells you that they get overmatched sometimes, just completely overmatched, and they've shown it.
And in fairness to the fans, there are aspects of what's happening that are frustrating. It's frustrating to see Kelly Oubre in the starting lineup night after night, even if he had a good game. Even if he had a good game against the Pistons, if you watch that game, it was a lot of results over process, because there were a few times yet again that Steph Curry is wide open or somebody's wide open and he's making the wrong decision. I think it's frustrating for fans to watch a guy in the starting lineup who has not earned that place in the starting lineup, frankly, and is there probably due to the immense financial investment in him being good. But if you want to take that 30,000-foot view and you want to step back from it and not think game to game in a season where they have zero chance of winning the championship, it's way more important for the Warriors that Andrew Wiggins turns out to be good than that Kelly Oubre turns out to be good. And Andrew Wiggins turning into a guy from the worst contract in the league to quietly efficient, oddly consistent, blocking more than twice as many shots as he did as a Timberwolf. I mean, that's huge, not just in terms of what they can be going forward, but if you want to flip him, that's also big.
I just say, is this the greatest Steve Kerr play of all time, is to make sure that we all appreciate Andrew Wiggins by playing Kelly Oubre so much? It's like, wow, he's better than Kelly Oubre. He's really good. What a play that would be. What a play that would be. And he is a lot better than Kelly Oubre. There is not a question about that. I don't know. Like, when people talk about trade Kelly Oubre, and maybe they can, I just say, what are you trading Kelly Oubre for? I mean, I know expiring contract, whatever, but man, I don't know what you get, Kelly. I don't know what you get really on the market for Kelly Oubre.
One thing I would say is, as we talk about like this wild swinging polarities of the season, they're the worst rebounding team in basketball. They had the worst starting lineup in the league by far, yet they're supposed to be like a fringe playoff team. That's what caused a lot of angst. And then, yeah, the Oubre stuff, where Ethan's right, is like he was slumping. Like, was that one of the worst slumps in NBA history to start a season? Like,
yes. I mean, yeah, for a good player. Yeah, I mean, for a $14 million player.
Yeah, I'm about to go look right now of like the high volume 3-point shooters in the league, like where does he sit as far as like worst 3-point percentage?
And you throw in turnovers in that mix and lack of assists. It was really bad. I mean, players don't normally get 20 games to do that.
177 guys have taken 50 or more threes this season. He's at 22.8%, which is second worst.
Who's worst?
Alexei Pokuševski, the 19-year-old rookie for the Thunder who, like, has no business being in the league, but the Thunder's tanking. So they're like, just bring him overseas, play him a bunch of minutes. Like, let's see what this kid is. Rumor has it now we have Marcus Thompson. Marcus, thoughts on the 11-9 Warriors?
Yeah.
You're supposed to come off the bench firing, Marcus, not just stumbling around with a ball.
That's supposed to be Kelly Oubre?
Yeah, you're supposed to action. You're supposed to energy off the bench.
Oubre getting killed. I feel like he had a decent week. He had only had one bad game.
I'm saying, he was good off the bench.
There's only one game where he was an absolute failure. The other ones, he was okay.
He was like 7 of 7 one point in a Timber of Wolf game.
He came in getting buckets. Where do we start?
We just talked about just like the polarities of the season and then obviously like the fervent nature of the reactions, which, you know, at 11-9.
I'm doing the reaction to the reaction. Is that what I'm doing,
TK? Reaction to the reaction. Absolutely.
The reaction to the reaction. That's what we're doing.
Do you want to fire Steve or not? That's really the...
Or you could give a niche take. You could just give a niche take on the season.
Beat the teams you're supposed to beat and split against the really good ones. There you go. Boom. That's the Warriors' plan. I actually think Steve Kerr has done a good job. He somehow ends up always vindicated. His long game always seems to work out. If Draymond is right and he's a couple weeks away, when this team is clicking on all cylinders, Steve's going to have some I told you so's. You know, he's going to have some, see, right? Now we're rolling a little bit and I told y'all to be patient. So I think Steve's actually done a pretty good job. You know, even though I'm definitely an advocate of Steph shooting 25 times a game, I still think that's the way I do it.
I understand all that. I watch Kelly Oubre start and, you know, what is going on here? These are essentially wasted minutes with a starting group. But it's not like they have like Damian Lee's for this sure thing going to be great with the starting.
Oh my God, you've been killing people for that too. Like, who's coming in?
Who do you think they got back there? Now, again, is it
Will Barton, baby?
Is it some amount of improvement possible? Yes. Is it some amount of not improvement? Yes. So that's where, like, hey, I get getting Oubre out of there would seem like the normal thing to do. But it's not like Bazemore, Lee, Mulder, Poole, whoever, Smiley Geach, whoever else you want to put on that list. They still got Jacob Evans on this team. I'm not sure. Any of those guys would be like, hey, that's it. The starting lineup's a lock now. So that part of it, I certainly understand from Kerr's point of view. And that part of it, I still think he's using as a, hey, I still got a move or two left. I didn't think he was going to go loony for Wiseman. But you look at, you know what, who's leading the team in plus minus right now over the season? Ethan's guy, Kevon
the Looney Renaissance,
number one.
Who did he take the medal from?
Damian Lee, who was number two, and who was last on this list? I don't think anybody would be shocked. Kelly Oubre. Oh, yeah. Wiseman second to last.
But I will say though, like, I get Steve's point, but also if it gets you two games, doesn't that matter in a season like this? If you're 13-7, that's a dramatic difference than 11-9.
There's probably an argument that on the back end, if all this long game works and you get seven more games on the back end than you would have gotten because you created this growth pattern, then it's a better argument on the back end. Going into the playoffs, who knows?
Or the long game is just creating trade value for Kelly Oubre, and maybe that's more important than them.
Are they doing that, though?
No, it's not. It's been going the other way. If anything, they should make him more of a Sasquatch.
Can I just say, he actually had a decent week. Like, he really did. I mean, He had the nice game against the Timberwolves, the absolute dud in Phoenix. I mean, he pretty much lost the game, so don't get me wrong there. I thought he was okay against Detroit. What he was against Detroit is what they want from him consistently, right? Is like, you know, do some disruptive stuff. You're going to make some mistakes, but still add to the mix.
Yeah, make a couple shots would be a bit, yeah, make a couple shots is pretty important for him too at this point when he's going to keep jacking. I mean, that's the point I think we all, like, if you're going to shoot this terribly, just stop shooting. You know, just take three in a game instead of 11 or 14 or 16. Take 6 if you're feeling good. Take 9 if you're feeling really good. And he just puts up 12 a game. You're like, boop, he's putting up, you know, 5 threes. He's putting 5 threes a game. That part is the one I think that is baffling to me.
I'll push back on good week a little bit. I mean,
I said decent.
You're technically right as far as 2 good games to 1 awful game. But that one awful game, not only was it on national TV, but his teammates, or specifically Steph Curry, was just throwing shots at him after the game.
Theoretically, not by name.
Allegedly,
by name.
allegedly eviscerated him for all to see. And so I do think that might have overshadowed the contributions of Kelly's week when we look at it. Maybe credit to Steph because he bounced back with a good game after that.
The one thing that, you know, Steve has mentioned after the Timberwolves game, because, you know, Oubre, I think, had maybe 4 assists in that game. He's had a couple 3 and 4 assist games. He doesn't do it all the time. He still sometimes, like, wants to go, this is my time, and, like, take people off the dribble. But he does seem to be getting more often, hey, if I'm catching and I'm slashing into a lane, go to the rim, but don't try to beat guys off the dribble. Catch it and move it if the lane's not there. He does seem to be doing that a bit more. But, you know, he also then did that the other day and had, like, Draymond Green eye-rolling at half court as he was, like, trying to take, like, Wayne Ellington off the dribble or something.
He is a uniquely, like, total left-handed player who drives to the right side more than any total left-handed player I've ever seen. And he can't make a right-handed layup. He can't do it. So it's bizarre. Like if you're going to drive with the left side. Don't drive on the right side. He just does bizarre things that, having watched the Warriors for as long as we have, you just haven't seen guys do like that. Certainly not to that volume. Shaw Livingston played a ton of minutes. Did he take a ton of shots? No. There was a reason for this. And Kelly Oubre does not seem to have anything like that on his mind. Anyway, we've talked enough about Oubre. We always talk about Oubre.
I'll tell you where I wanted to flip the topic.
We always talk about losing, apparently, and losses, yes, right?
We're talking after a win, technically.
Yeah, but you don't do that all 82 after wins. Come on,
we
now.
We did it after the Detroit game. I, like, made sure we did it because they won.
All 82. All 82 hosted by Anthony Slaker.
Oh, man. Wow.
Draymond had a post-game comment that said he's 2 to 3 weeks away. I asked him, like, when he thinks the, like, peak version of this version of Draymond Green can give to this team, basically how good he can be this year, because I think we all understand he's, like, peak Draymond isn't coming back. You know, 14 points a game, 38% from 3, 2 steals and 2 blocks, defensive player of the year, that's gone. When should the Warriors expect the best version of 30 whatever he is now? Is he 31 yet? 31 year old Draymond
Green. He is 31 in March.
Yeah, he says 2 to 3 weeks. What do we think that version of Draymond Green is this year? Because right now he's shooting like 36% overall, 21% from 3. He only has 2 total blocks all season. He hasn't rebounded like they need him to rebound. How much better do you expect him to get in those categories, at least?
You know, he's not even playing his normal minutes yet. You notice? I mean, I'm just looking at his minute totals: 29, 20, 30, 25, 28.
That's kind of what he is now.
Yeah, you figure he's 32. You figure he's a 32-minute game. I just figure he's 32, 34, and in a big game, 36. Clearly, there's more for him to give, and he knows there's more for him to give. And, you know, whether that shot ever – like you say the 38% every time we mention it, but can you imagine Draymond ever shooting 38% from 3 again? Ever? No.
He needs to get above 38% overall right now.
Yeah, exactly. Again, the offense is the offense, but – they play better when Draymond's on the floor. Certainly, that's just that it just happens. Sometimes they get blown out with him, but they generally play better with him on the floor. And I think if you see him get those minute totals up where Kerr feels comfortable upping him, he'll play the whole first quarter, not substituting him out with 3 left in the first and third. You know, getting him back in, you know, to make sure he closes the fourth and, you know, the 7-minute mark, not the 6. I think those will be our hints. Because I don't think they think he quite has, and I think part of his answer to you, Slater, was that I don't think his wind is still all the way there. I don't think he's all the way in get up and down, push the ball. When you asked him where can you really help this team, he didn't say it was rebound. He was push the ball, get everything moving so they can't throw those janky defenses at Steph. They can't set up in the half court and let the ball move around a little easier that way. And that unleashes Oubre to an extent, unleashes Wiggins a little bit more, gets Draymond to the hoop.
I'll tell you what concerns me. Can you venture a guess as to how many total blocks Draymond has this season and how many total blocks he had in his fantastic 2016 season?
Well, you're talking about total. So
total blocks.
If I had to guess, I would say he had over 100 2016. I'd imagine that, right? More than one in a game.
113 total.
What did Slater say? He had like two blocks this year? Three blocks?
Two blocks still.
And none since January 10th against Toronto, by the way.
So that's what concerns me. And yeah, he can help them pushing the ball, which it is a little funny. You know, how can I help the Warriors? Doing the thing I love to do. doing the thing I'm really, really into doing. But as far as when is he going to be back and when is he going to be at the expectations, I mean, that's got to turn around. That's really interesting. And you wonder if some of that is scheme, but I do see some potential physical decline there unless that turns around. To have only two blocks at this point of the season is amazing.
I mean, some of that I think is like Wiseman and Wiggins are both in the top like 10 or 15 in blocks. So he's not necessarily the shot blocker on the team. But also, when's the last time you even remember him like going in, attempting to block a shot at the rim? Even if he got a foul or didn't get the block, like he's still doing really smart, good defensive stuff. I mean, you saw what he did to Blake Griffin the other night, you know, positional stuff, what he did to Nurkic in the Portland games. But Heath is right. Like, I don't even know when he's had a block chance in the last 10 games. He doesn't even go for them.
Certainly not the help block. Like, he doesn't do the help stuff.
And the rebounds, too. Like, he's not going in there. Remember, Draymond was, like, the king of the tough, in-traffic, clutch rebound. He's not really doing that anymore right now.
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Remember during our long, cold off season when we were doing the rewatches? And remember when I think it might have been the first one we rewatched. It was that Steph Curry 40-foot dagger in Oklahoma City game. I think he had 15 rebounds, like 15 assists in that game, something like that. And I mean, the assists, he's actually assisting at a somewhat normal clip right now. But 15 rebounds in that game. Remember the way, yeah, like you're saying, he was like bodying Steven Adams up, going and like high pointing the ball in traffic. And yeah, 15 rebounds in like a high, you know, athlete game with Durant and Adams and Westbrook and all those guys out there. He doesn't exist as that anymore.
It's jarring, too, when you see it, right? Like, when you watch old highlights of Draymond, like, he is moving. Like, you kind of forget that, you know, I know he's not the most explosive athlete, but he definitely had a quickness advantage going up against some bigs.
Did you look up how many dunks he's had, by the way, Slater, after he asked you or mentioned that might have been his first
two? That was his second. Well, even within, and maybe it was another answer of the same one. He's like, actually, I had one on 2 feet the other day, but that was my first one on 1 foot. But yes, he has two dunks.
I was so distracted by what they were saying about Magruder that I just, you know, couldn't even keep track of anything regarding the team.
Did you see the blowback they got from that?
I have a quick take on that. I think it's interesting to me because, as I wrote about a bit in my book, that's the real NBA. I mean, it's pitched like cutesy and Instagram and people having fun and soap opera, palatable soap opera about what teams people are going to. That's professional sports right there. It's vicious. The stuff these guys say to each other, the amount of cruelty, not just towards an opponent, but within team. Basically, you're going to be going back to Russia soon if you don't start hitting your shots. I mean, that's real NBA basketball. And Clay, I think, just forgot that he was in public and was saying the stuff he would just say if he was on the bench.
I don't know, man. He was talking to Azubuki and Fitz. I think he knew exactly what he was doing. That wasn't like a hot mic. He was answering questions. Like, I think he did that on purpose.
I think the phrase Clay knew exactly what he was doing, I think that's an argument that I'm going to take the other side in the moment. I'm going to take the other side. I think he was
unfiltered. I'm just saying people were saying it was a hot mic, right? Like, oh, he was talking.
No, it wasn't a hot mic.
They were talking to him and he was answering, right? Like,
it wasn't a hot mic. Like,
they were trying to tell him to chill and he wasn't chilling.
No, he was just being what he is. You know, in a typical situation, and maybe because he missed it, he kept talking about how much he missed it. And so he was acting the way these guys act when they're on the bench.
He even said that, right? He's like, man, I can't even do nothing about it. I'm in a boot, right? Like he was thirsty to get out there.
That's the real NBA. It's vicious and it's cruel. And let me tell you, Clay isn't any different than the majority of players right there. And it's funny when people get exposed to it and they recoil. And you just have to wonder, what do you guys think this is? This is a pretty cutthroat industry. You know, if you don't dominate your matchup enough every night, you're out of the league. And there are only 300 or so spots. And everything is underpinned by that. So it's really vicious. I mean, you're not going to be happy about it.
I mean, is there anything more vicious than Honey Nut Cheerios?
I mean, that's pretty vicious in a different way.
I mean, that was cold game.
That's a different kind of viciousness. But I just wanted to get that take out there that people make it specific to Clay or the Warriors or Draymond. And to my mind, that's actually just the NBA. And at some level, it's probably why people like it, because it's that height of competition right there.
Well, I mean, have you ever, has anyone ever heard Draymond kind of off mic yelling at something? I mean, like the Paul Pierce thing? Like, remember, you thought they were going to have a parade for you?
You thought you was Kobe?
Like Kobe? They don't love you like that. They don't love you like that. I mean, that's as vicious as it gets in Paul Pierce's final season. But that's competitive nature. That's back and forth. I was just saying, we saw some of that in Clay. Remember when the Draymond and LeBron stuff in the finals, and Clay was the one, you know, shooting fire at Draymond for complaining and for looking to the refs. I mean, that was out of character, we thought, for Clay, but that was one of those moments I just immediately flashed that. Like, this is Clay. This he's competitive. You think he's the Zen, you know, just mystic, you know, China Clay, but he gets in there. He's like raised by Michael Thompson. You think Michael Thompson doesn't have a mouth? He was, you know, he got barked at by his dad all the time. So it's NBA stuff. It just got
with two brothers.
With two brothers, all competing, all competitive. And this is a guy who's thrived with the Warriors who do that stuff. They do it to each other. This is how they go. Now, you know, which is maybe where Durant didn't quite fit in. You know, he wasn't a guy that they felt like they could bark at until Draymond really, really, really barked at him. But that was kind of pent up stuff. I guess we're going back over ancient history there. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. But it's part of who they are. This is who they are. And you can love them or you hate them for them. There was a lot of blowback for that. I was kind of surprised by it, but I guess I shouldn't be surprised by it. You know, we're just in the middle of it. We just cover them every day. We just write what we see. We write what we know. And then people drop in and they don't like it sometimes. It's the way it goes. You're a very popular team. You're a watched team. You're a ratings team. As Ethan says, you're a public team. You're going to get reactions to it, and we're all watching it.
I just felt for everybody named Rodney. Like
Rodney.
I was like, geez, Draymond just went after. If your name was Rodney, you felt some kind of way about that. Like, he just mocked the whole name, which was hilarious. Like, I mean, look, on one hand, we say we want the candidate, right? But if it gets too candid, you know, people want to run. This is who they are. Like, this is what they do.
Well, yeah, and if someone does it to them and it gets caught on microphone, there it goes. You know what? Someone gets on Draymond for shooting whatever he's shooting. That's life, you know, and that's life in the NBA. It's competitiveness. And you know how you win? You win games. That's how you win. You don't do it any other way.
And Rodney McGruder did walk all the way over to the Warriors bench to say something.
What did Toscano?
I have no idea. Like, but whatever he said, pissed him off, but he walked all the way over to the Warriors bench, which is, you know, I think a little bit more toughness than Draymond gave credit for. Like, I mean, I guess like Draymond said, ain't nobody gonna fight, so what are you doing? But I mean, still, to walk over to the Warriors bench after not playing and get in Juan's face.
If I was Draymond or Klay Thompson, next time they're on a court with Rodney Magruder, I would kind of have my head on a swivel a little bit.
Which is when, next year?
Who? I mean, well. First of all, Detroit—they've already played twice, so it's not against Detroit. But Rodney Magruder is the kind of guy who might just
get shipped over to Miami, and then suddenly
you're on the court with him.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, you guys, Wiseman segment probably is, you know, the weekly look at what's been an interesting rookie season. I'd say the move to the bench seems to have actually like helped him. Maybe, I don't know, maybe he was going to already have kind of what I thought was a pretty good week.
It's just the move away from Oubre, just getting away from Oubre.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly in better lineups. Like, even though that, I mean, like, you're kind of laughing, but I mean, you're obviously correct within that. Like, right, they now have him out there with a shooter instead of Oubre. It's Damian Lee, it's Kent Bazemore, or it's Michael Mulder, which opens up the floor more for his offensive game, which was probably the biggest thing he did this week, right? He does seem to be scoring more often. I mean, you mentioned his per 36 numbers. How many points is he at per 36? Like, over 20 at this point. Duckins, seals on the fast break. I mean, I think he's just, one thing he's getting more comfortable in is just scoring. He looks to me like a 20-point scorer pretty soon in his career. I don't mean like next month. I mean, year two, year three, I could see him being a 20-point scorer.
He can create shots, and that's a hard thing for seven-footers. You know, 19-year-old seven-footers for sure. Like, he literally can like take it, drop, step, spin, turn, put up a shot. Now, it's not always going to go in, but those, you know, he can just get a shot off. And that is an incredibly important escape valve for an offense that sometimes bogs down. Now, they can't go to it like with high efficiency now. Again, 19 years old, juggles the ball sometimes. Sometimes the shot looks funny. But he can get to it, which I think is tremendous. Like, you know, they'll do the pick and roll with Looney and throw him the pass, and he catches it, and he's 1 foot away from the basket, and he can't put the ball in the basket. So even as I praise Looney, Ethan, I have praised Looney, high plus minus, all that, the stuff around the basket is just so hilarious for me to watch, because it just, I can just say, they make the perfect pass, he makes a perfect roll, there's no defense there, and the shot's not going in the basket.
My favorite Looney is pump fake, pump fake, pump fake, pump fake, exactly. Pump fake, pump fake.
Okay, it's all about those aircraft carrier assists right there. It's all about that
screen assist, all that stuff. That's all fine. I mean, but what Wiseman can do is he gets that ball in that position that's going up at the rim, and sometimes it's not going in, but a lot of times it is. And as people, and one thing I do appreciate, people across the league, as they kind of sift through the Warriors, they're not watching every minute, they're not following, they look at Wiseman, they go, whoa, there's something there. If you were like NBA writer in New York and you're just going through games, you would go, wow, that guy's something. Like, I go, you know,
who's
Obi Toppin,
that kid, right?
Yeah, with Obi Toppin, I go, huh, he's not playing a lot. That's interesting. With Wiseman, I go, whoa, that dunk was something.
Yeah, I watched the Knicks-Clippers game yesterday. Obi Toppin looks very much like a ninth man for a long time. And, you know, he's supposed to be the polished product coming out.
Yeah, and he's just standing at the three-point line, right? That's what I just see him.
He's just floating around, really. And he looks small on the court, to be honest.
I said that in the preseason, man. I couldn't believe how small he looks.
That quickly kid looks good, though.
Quickly does look good. Really
very good.
That quickly kid really looks good. Incredible.
You know who looks great? Julius Randle looks great.
Yep. Yeah, he does.
He looks like he did when he was a young player, as opposed to like the last few years.
He looks like Zion.
Like he skipped a few years, right? Like, remember he was like giving, you know, he was warm with Draymond. He was a young Lakers. Like, man, he's gonna be good. Then he disappeared, and then whatever alternate universe he was in, he was actually getting better. Because now it looks like it, right? Like, it looked like he just came back, and he's this player you thought he would be after this hiatus. That Knicks team's got a little something, man.
They sure look good against the Warriors.
Like, any Kentucky guy is gonna eventually provide value, I think, is the lesson in the NBA.
I don't know, man. I'm still waiting on Trey Lyles. Come on.
Yeah, that one might be the one.
My goodness.
He's a skilled Trey Lyles, a skilled player too. You would have thought
super skilled, man. I thought he'd be nice.
Are we seeing Kerr figure out the guards here, by the way? Like, he had Mulder in there in the rotation, and he's out of the rotation. I'm still not quite sure what Steve's
doing. I mean, well, he's back in now, right? Right?
He got to be, because Poole's in Orlando.
That was the odd part of last game, was like Poole's, like, his send-off, it was like a moment I was like, are we sure he should maybe not be playing over Mulder right now? Because Mulder's not playing well, at least the last, like, 3-4 games.
Well, Kerr put him in that rotation and then yanked him right back out. Like, I mean, there's some transition defense stuff, I think, that's really problematic with him, where Kerr just does not want him on the floor when he's doing stuff like that. And the shot hasn't been great, by the way. Like, that's his whole role, is hit that shot. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he's not making it at a high efficiency.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Should I dangle the big speculative topic out here? Because I'm not sure if we're going to get to it.
Go.
Man, TK, 43.6%. Come on, what you mean?
Really? Well, man, that's more
than I would've definitely thought. Doesn't feel like it. It definitely doesn't feel like it.
Bradley Beal.
Beal.
I'm about to have larger conversation with like Fred Katz on the Athletic NBA show about this. But yeah, I mean,
I thought Ethan was going to say Jeremy Lin the way you were coming at it from around the corner.
No, he's going to be the one taking minutes from Mannion and Poole.
Versus Jeremy. Bradley Beal. Yeah, I mean, what do you think about that one, Slater?
I think it's the conversation that opens up a wider discussion about like mortgaging the bridge to the future now for a slightly better, whatever percentage chance. You know, I was talking to Tim about this offline, and I said let's say a 20% better chance of winning the title next year if they got Bradley Beal, 25%. I mean, that is a large jump. You know, you are mortgaging if we're talking about, because we would be talking about Wiseman and the
Wolves.
You're
not the prohibitive favorite. You know, you're giving away the future for a shot. And it seems like a lot of fans want it.
Well, they want to win now, you know, because they'd be better next year with Bradley Beal.
But if you're the Wizards, you want Wiseman. I mean, that's the thing you're asking for.
If you're the Wizards, you're not doing a trade with the Warriors if James Wiseman's not included. How could you? You're going, oh, you're not going to give us James Wiseman. Okay, Denver, Michael Porter Jr., is he on the table? Okay, Atlanta, let's talk about a bunch of your young guys. They have to get Wiseman.
And I think Beal's great. I really do, but if Clay is anything, well, first of all, you're paying Clay $40 million or $38 million, and then you're going to add Beal as making 33, and you're probably going to have to pay Beal to make sure doesn't hit free agency in 2 years. And so, and by the way, they're somewhat overlapping. It doesn't, you know, like, I understand they're both great players.
$160 million on them.
Yeah, and you've got Andrew Wiggins, and you've got Steph Curry, and you've got Draymond Green, and at some point that doesn't work mathematically in a payroll, especially when two of them...
Does it work on the court? Like, if that's your five right there.
Clay and Beal are going to do some...
Clay is the salary match going the other way.
We've discussed this. That's why and Clay's not going to be the salary match, because there's no way Washington would take that.
And neither is Wiggins, apparently.
And then you don't have a small forward if you put Wiggins into it. That's why Durant was everyone says, oh, it's just like the Durant move. No, there's never going to be a Durant move when all the players' ages lined up like that and the positioning was perfect. It was the perfect position to place in there with the Warriors. This is why it's not parallel to Durant. There's just the money. And also, by the way, when they signed Durant, they were under the cap. This is a whole different scenario. Spending Joe Lacob's money, that's fine by me. There's some point, though, when you have five players making $30 million or more that it doesn't work. And with no way to get out of it, no other extra picks to get yourself that young superstar who can balance it out. I don't see it. I don't see Wiseman plus the pick for Beal. I just don't see it.
There's a school of thought here, and I've heard it, which is that Beal's a top 15 player, so you got to do it. You give up everything for a top 15 player. But if you look into the nuances of it, I think Beal's great. I think Beal's fantastic. I've got pretty much nothing but praise for his game, but it's not a situation like the Lakers trying to get Anthony Davis where there is an obvious positional need. He is not overlapping with anything else you do. He's
also
going to
Anthony
fit.
Anthony Davis is better than Bradley Beal.
Well, that's the other thing. He's Anthony Davis. That's number one. He's Anthony Davis. And number two, it's an obvious fit. Him and LeBron in the pick and roll. You need a big. It fits perfectly. Mortgage your future. But with Bradley Beal, there's overlap, right? And it's not a 2 + 2 = 4. There is some diminishing returns there when you add Beal, and he does a lot of what Steph does, and he does some of what Klay does, and he's a small off guard, and he does play defense, but he's a smaller off guard. And so obviously it would make them better if they got Bradley Beal, but does it make them so much better that you're giving away all of your future? And I have to say, you can't. And you're going to be potentially haunted by it, especially if you're in a situation where you're giving up more than Wiseman and maybe that Minnesota pick. I think it's a little rich for my blood.
I think if only the Minnesota pick was on the table, I think that's worth it. You know, I think this is as potentially as valuable as the Minnesota pick's ever going to be. Because what if it doesn't convey? What if it, you know, becomes the eighth pick in the draft and like the guy they get's like not even that good, you know? Wiseman is much more tangible of an asset to give up because you know who he is. You know, you don't know what he's going to be necessarily. And that's probably what the conversation comes down to. Because look, I'm a little bit higher on Beal as a fit for them in the immediate than you guys are. I mean, he's average 35 points a game. He scored 31 last year. Like, they would be unguardable offensively if Clay's even 80% of what he is. Now, like I said, a 20% better chance to win the title next year, which is a valuable thing to get, obviously. Is that worth giving up a guy who could be an all-NBA center down the line for 6 years or something like that? To me, the conversation comes down to whatever you think about Wiseman, you probably think about this trade. Whatever you think about Wiseman's going to be. Because if you just think Wiseman's going to be an okay starting center long term, I think it would be worth it to go get Bradley Beal. But I think most people in the organization think Wiseman's going to be better than just an average starting center in the long term. So I don't think they want to give that up.
That's the thing people underrate. You have the potential to be haunted by this move. Versus if you never end up making the move, and GMs do think that way. If you never end up making the move, there will be some fans who will grouse, and Andy Liu might light you up if Bradley Beal helps some other team win a championship. But if you trade away James Wiseman and he becomes what you've been saying he's going to become, you're probably not winning the championship, and that's probably going to get hung around your neck for a decade or so. So that's what you're risking, to be clear.
I don't even know if Wiseman is the actual issue here. Like, if you give up Wiseman and you just go with Steph, Beal, Clay, Draymond, Wiggins, how good are you actually? They'll be able to score, but who are they guarding? Like, who are they guarding?
Yeah, Clay is not going to be able to guard like he did, too.
Yeah, the Durant part worked, not because he was the greatest scorer, right? But because he played defense. That's why it works. I mean, you're looking at Brooklyn now. They got all the offense you need. They can't guard anybody.
Well, let me just... what I would say is, like, let's think about a starting lineup next year of Steph, Clay, Wiggins, Draymond, Wiseman. And we're talking 20-year-old James Wiseman compared to Steph, Beal, Clay, Wiggins. You know, Draymond could be your small ball, but you can go to the mid-level and you could get yourself a Marcus Gasol, a Serge Ibaka, you know, that type of veteran center with the mid-level.
You can't. They didn't do it this time. Like, that's why they got one. That's why they got
Wiseman. You're going to be able to better when you could say, hey, come win a title with this win now team. You probably could have got a Marcus Gasol if Clay wasn't having the ACL and Marcus Gasol sitting there going, well, I want to win a title and you guys can't win a title anymore. So I do think if you had that win now team, you could go fill in. My point is they're better next year with Bradley Beal, but I still don't think you make the move because of what's down the line.
I don't know that they are better. That's what I'm saying. If you go get Marc Gasol or Serge Ibaka, if you go get Marc Gasol or pick your center, is that guy playing down the stretch of games? You got five guys making at least $25 million. Which one are you sitting?
None of them. That's your five. And I like that five better than a five with 20-year-old James Wiseman, but I don't want to trade 20-year-old James Wiseman. That would be my thought.
My point is that five might be better, but it won't be a better team. You got five dudes. Everybody who comes to this team will know I'm not playing when the game is on the line because they got five dudes making $30 million and none of them are sitting. So that's your team. That's what you basically are saying. Everybody else is like, okay, second quarter, start of the fourth quarter. But at the end of games, you got five guys or you sitting somebody. You beat LeBron and Anthony Davis with that team?
You have three of the best shooters in the league at a high volume. I think you could defend pretty well in the modern NBA with it. I think you need Draymond Green to be able to defend the Anthony Davises of the world. And that's another future conversation then.
Who's guarding the point guard?
Bradley Beal. Wiggins has shown he's a good defender. I mean, like, Beal, I think, has been a good two-way guy in his past. Now he's like melted down on, in a Wizards situation.
Beal can guard, but he's 6'3". I mean, I think he's a good defensive player, but I think you are a little bit back to not necessarily Steph Amonte, but there is this thing that they like, this thing that Kerr likes of having the large two guard, and that's taken off the table. I agree with Slater that they're better next year with Bradley Beal, and Bradley Beal can, despite the redundancies, you do finally have somebody who can not only shoot, but actually pass to Steph and find him, which is something that they haven't had.
Bradley Beal is awesome.
Yeah, no question. He's awesome. I'm just saying, you giving it all up, and is that the championship team?
It's too rich for my blood. No guaranteed championship.
The unspoken thing is here is, like, what if he has to replace Clay? Because we don't know what Clay's going to be. He's better than we don't know what Clay is. But part of the championship mix is Clay is back and good. So, like, that becomes the floating unknowable. And I would rather have the 19-year-old center who's going to be 20 next year, who I think is moving up, and that pick, because I do think it's going to cost both. Washington does not have to trade Beal. Does not have to trade Beal.
And if they do, they're going to have some good packages elsewhere.
Exactly. Like, they're going to have where it's going to be similar to Wiseman plus the pick. The Warriors have to put up Wiseman plus the pick, and I just don't see that. They're not sure about whether Clay's going to be back 100%. We don't know. And if you're just putting Beal in there because you kind of don't know, but it's going to help, but you're going to, I don't see where that, I think Wiseman plus that pick could be the bridge to wherever they're going and could help the next season, maybe in some way, not a huge way. And that's where the value is. Other than, yeah, we all like Beal. But I think, like, if you wait a little bit and something blows up in Milwaukee, guess who Milwaukee's going to want? James Wiseman. If something screwy happens in Philadelphia, although they're playing great now, who's Philadelphia going to want? James Wiseman. That's why I think you hold it for either you keep him and watch him grow into something really good, or when you do it, you don't do it for a 6'3 guard. That would be my
point. I was going to say, you know who else you might want? James Wiseman.
Exactly. Like, that one too. You know, and Jonathan Kuminga, all these people we're watching. Like, I see seven guys that you could just line up in this year's draft and go, that guy could help immediately. Zaire Williams. These are all really good players. Again, you don't know how great they're going to be in the NBA, that were not all on the board for the draft last year, I should say.
You know, I don't know what deals will formulate, and I think Ethan's on my side on this. I do think the Minnesota pick could be moved. You know what I mean? Like, this is a good time to kind of dangle that out.
It's value, but man, you better get
more value than it might ever be. You,
if it ends up an 8 pick, it never gets the value that it has right now.
But you have the prospect of it being the 4. Yeah, I mean, it is correct. Right now is when you do it. But teams aren't going to trade it, like, assume it's the 4th pick either when they're talking to the Warriors. Like, it could be the 8. It could be not. It might not be conveyed till next year. I would really, really be worried.
Gamblers always assume the highest. Come on. Somebody's over there holding a rabbit foot like, this is going to be 4. You know, hey, that lineup, by the way, Beal, Steph, Clay, Draymond, Wiggins, $175 million next year.
I do want to see somebody pay 5 max contracts to their
entire team. Yeah, I mean, the Warriors could be the one. And would that be the one that gets you a championship? We shall see. Depends on, is LeBron going to be great until he's 40? Some of this does have to factor in that. Like, are you waiting out LeBron, or is LeBron going to wait you out? Because this is getting ridiculous with him.
Well, as far as long-term strategy, I'm just more of the perspective, and I have been for a while, as Slater is indicating, grit your teeth, make your best pick in 2020 draft. They did that. So far, Wiseman looks like a pretty damn good pick, even though some of these other guys are looking better than we might think as well. And then probably trade the Wolves pick because that's 1 year down the timeline. You know, you're trying to align the timeline somewhat. So I think that's where the next move's got to come from. If it's going to be a trade, it's got to be that pick, maybe something else. I think once you commit to Wiseman and you start with the development, I don't think you deal him. I think the downside risk is too high.
I don't know, man. Slater's talking me into Beal now.
He's great.
Ooh, what a turn.
Let's go. No, let's go. No. Beal's nice, bro.
Beal's a good player. He's a good player.
I do think, though, like TK is right. I mean, the real, if you're replacing, if you need to replace Clay, Beal is, put him right there and you, this thing keeps moving.
I mean, not to take you guys down too far of a rabbit hole. We got to get out of here soon. But what if Washington wouldn't do this? But if it was like Clay in the Minnesota pick for Beal, that would be.
Yeah, you do it.
That's a different conversation. That's a totally different conversation.
No, and it's that would be a horrific trade for Washington.
No way, Washington. Yeah, no, Washington's not.
It would be a horrific trade for Washington that Warriors fans would be sad about and lament. But hey, you know what? KD looking pretty good. Some of these Achilles guys looking no worse for wear. It's something to think about.
That's kind of like, I'm glad they brought it up on the broadcast with Clay, but I wish they talked about it a little bit more. Is you do see some of these Achilles players with Achilles injuries looking pretty good now. It's not the explosive stuff. I don't know. You know, if you get an Achilles injury in your 30s, you're probably not going to be an explosive player. But KD had some explosion, but that wasn't his whole game. He's looking really good right now. He's hitting some shots that are just incredible, like prime KD. Clay, certainly not an explosive player. Is he watching what Kevin's doing? I think he's thinking, man, I'm going to be back all the way, or at least as close to it as possible. Maybe not on the defensive side, and I think Kevin has some slippage there, but that happens after an Achilles. And I look at Durant, and I go, man, you know, I think Clay is going to look like Clay when he comes back, you know, but pending any other complications, who knows? He's also coming off an ACL, so all that adds up. But I look at Durant and think, I think the Warriors could be pretty good next year is what I'm looking at. If Clay Thompson comes back and hits 40% from three or whatever he's going to do at a high volume, that's what they need. And if I don't
know
that
Brad, I don't bank on that either.
Yeah, and I don't know that. You have that sitting there, and you go, well, why would you get Bradley Beal if it cost you James Wiseman in the pick? Because you have to count on that because you're not trading Clay Thompson. That's the one fallacy that, like, Warriors fans say, oh, you can't trade Clay Thompson. Yes, you can't trade him because he's not tradable. That contract is not tradable. It wasn't tradable before the Achilles, and it certainly is not tradable now.
All right, we should probably get out of here. Another trade speculation edition.
Yeah, I think people might. Yeah, we went down
a few rabbit holes.
Yeah, it's okay.
That's what the public wants. That's what they're into.
All right, quickly. Celtics, Mavericks, Spurs, next five games. What is the success? 3-2?
Yeah, I think they could survive. So. Yeah, I think they might want to try to sweep the Dallas. Doesn't mean they will. They're both on the road, right?
So the Spurs is what they want to sweep.
Yeah, they're going 4 in Texas.
Yeah, they're not going to win all four of those, obviously. But I could see 3-2. I mean, I could see 2-3 also as survivable, but I could see 3-2. Dallas is kind of shaky right now. Yeah, Dallas
very
is shaky.
Right now. And those two Dallas games will be fun because, I mean, you got the Doncic-Curry matchup, obviously. And one's on TNT Thursday night, and then the rematch is the ABC Saturday night game.
There you go.
And I think the league, you know, Ethan, I don't want to get too deep down this either, but I think their NBA is probably curious about what a Doncic-Curry matchup does ratings-wise on an ABC Saturday night.
I'm curious as well. I'm still waiting for it'll be out by the time people listen to this maybe, but I'm still waiting for Celtics, Lakers. NBA's got some interest. If MLB can't get their stuff together, wait, we can curse that thought. If MLB can't get their shit together, NBA might dominate the schedule slate for a little bit. That's something to watch out for.
Well, that's the thing. If MLB gets its stuff together, they will delay because that's the smart money is for them to delay. So actually, like if they rush into it, they're going to rush into it reporting February 17, and it might get a little. Actually, it's probably better for the NBA if the MLB does have it together because then it pushes it back a little bit, and the NBA is just going to have all February and March basically.
Yeah, NBA is going to have a little pocket, and it also just seems like college sports might be disproportionately impacted by what's going on right now because there's not really campus life going on, and they really seem in the background in a way that's more so. So NBA might have a nice little pocket this winter/spring coming up.
Leave him alone, Ethan. Leave him alone.
We'll see if you see your mea culpa. To...
We skipped right over that with Marcus. But anyway, I think that's enough, everybody.
It's been real. Until next time. We'll be right back.